Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Today, we're giving you an encore broadcast of the entire newsroom series, Skipping School. It's not easy to become a teacher. There are special tests, background checks, and student teaching. So why are so many teachers calling it quits and changing careers? In this first of a four-part series, GLT's Ryan Denham talks to former teachers about what led them to leave the classroom and what school districts can do to stop the bleeding.
Derek Sieg is an educator with nearly two decades of experience in Illinois, first as a PE teacher and coach, and then as a principal. But these days, Sieg isn't walking the halls of a K-12 school or standing in front of a classroom. His office is on the third floor of Fell Hall at Illinois State University, where he advises college students what classes to take or how to graduate on time.
And that's really the big draw for me, is being able to be a positive influence for students, whether they're junior high, high school, grade school, Illinois State University.
The 51-year-old is one of thousands of trained Illinois teachers who no longer teach. Teacher attrition, including those who leave the profession, is one of the main drivers of a crisis-level teacher shortage that's disrupting education statewide. Sieg's career path is not uncommon. After college, he taught for 6 years. When his kids were born, he was looking for a job more conducive to the demands of parenting. Coaching required a lot of after-school work hours, so he took a job at State Farm and then Country Financial, working in auto claims. But he missed teaching, so he went back. He earned his master's, became principal at a K-8 school in Flanagan, about 30 miles north of here. Then in 2015, his job was eliminated due to state funding issues. After a brief stint back in the classroom, he took a job, academic advising at ISU.
We have a lot of very good teachers that are not in the classroom in the state of Illinois.
As schools struggle to find applicants for their available positions, they're also losing teachers like Sieg. More than 12,000 educators left Illinois or the profession in 2015 and 2016. It's an attrition rate of 7%, according to the State Board of Education. It's a concern from Ben Matthews, field staff for the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union. He helps represent 1,800 employees in Unit 5 in District 87.
We're in the middle of almost a perfect storm, but not a good perfect storm, in that we have folks who are leaving the profession. That's a growing reason for people to not teach the following year, not work in our schools the following year, and it's combined with a shrinking pool of folks who want to get into the profession, which is leaving vacancies, jobs with a lot fewer applicants to choose from.
There are many reasons why teachers leave the profession, some personal, some systemic. They can add up. Bethany Baines was an elementary education major at ISU. She taught for a couple of years, first in Springfield and then as a teacher's assistant in Unit 5.
When you have something that you had committed your college education to and it's a dream, maybe I'm a little jaded looking back, but at the time, I probably would have said it was my dream.
Baines and her husband wanted to start a family, and the year-to-year uncertainty of whether she'd keep her job, it's common for young teachers, that caused anxiety. She also lacked the certification to do that small group reading intervention work she found most stimulating, and she couldn't afford to go back to school.
I didn't feel that I could financially support my family as a teacher's assistant.
She was also frustrated at times by a lack of freedom in how she ran her classroom. In one episode, she could tell from test scores that her students were not grasping some geometry concepts that they had just studied. Instead of moving on to the next unit as her school's schedule required, she instead crafted a hands-on intervention-style geometry lesson using marshmallows and toothpicks. She says her administration wasn't pleased. That reflected on her next evaluation.
That was very difficult for me when I felt like I didn't have really a whole lot of choice. Because as a teacher, you don't want to just throw information at your students. You want to make sure that they're getting it and ultimately that they carry that with them to not just the next test, but the next grade, and that they really grasp that concept.
It all added up. She says it was a difficult decision, but she left for a job in retail. Now she's full-time at Country Financial in Bloomington.
I have moved on, and I'm happy where I'm at.
Some trained teachers never even got started before calling it quits. That's what happened to Nick Pate of Bloomington, a former Marine who graduated from ISU in 2013. degree in secondary education. He thought his military experience and being a bit older than other new teachers would be advantages on the resume. He tried to land a teaching job for 2 years. He got close once, a third interview.
He said it was a really tough choice. It came down to me and the other guy, and he said basically it came to a coin flip. And I was like, really? Like, you just determined my future on a coin flip? Like, I was pretty put off by that.
With a family to support, Pate turned his waiter job at Biagi's into a career. He trained as a chef and is now a dining room service manager there. His teaching license expired this summer, and he chose not to renew it.
I always felt like I could have been a really great teacher, and I really was into it and loved everything about it. But it just seemed like maybe, you know, if I was as good as a teacher as I thought I was going to be, then somebody would have hired me. So they missed their opportunity, and it's unfortunate, but it's just kind of not something I want to do anymore.
A retention rate is defined as the percentage of full-time teachers who return to the same school year to year. In Illinois, it varies by district. The statewide average in 2017 was 86%. Most McLean County districts are doing slightly better than that, though Ridgeview and Tri-Valley lagged a bit, both at 83%. One way the districts are reacting is by increasing starting salaries. Unit 5's new 2-year agreement with its union raises new teacher base pay by nearly 7% to $37,000. Even that leaves a district lower than others. Those first few years on the job are key for determining whether a teacher becomes a lifelong educator or makes an early exit. That's according to Nancy Latham, a professor at ISU's College of Education who studied teacher attrition extensively.
That has a direct impact on districts. When you think about, there have been some studies that have shown that every new teacher, a district really to get them up and going and producing and having the impact we wanted to have, and that all that they need to do that, a district really is probably investing anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 in that teacher. Well, if that's a revolving door in those first 5 years, you can see how it's very hard on learners, it's very hard on a building, it's just on that entire community.
And it's not just the money. Here's Mark Jontry, Regional Superintendent of Schools for McLean, DeWitt, Logan, and Livingston Counties.
The research shows that those teachers that are adequately supported through a mentoring and induction type program are going to survive those first 2 or 3 years where the statistics show they otherwise might be dropping out of the profession.
Jontry says it needs to be comprehensive.
So I think the districts that can devote time and effort to that are going to realize the benefits of retaining teachers and improving the skill level of their teachers that are in those initial first 2 or 3 years.
With that in mind, the union that represents Unit 5 teachers bargained in its new contract for a new teacher mentoring program. It's according to Lindsay Dickinson, an 8th grade math teacher and president of the Unit 5 Education Association, or UFEA. New teachers will be paired with an experienced teacher based on their grade level or content area. There are certain designated topics they'll talk about each month, like how to navigate parent-teacher conferences, plus some after-school seminars for the new hires.
I hope that it adds up to not only buy-in to Unit 5, that they feel some sort of a connection and a responsibility to give back to Unit 5, but also realize the importance of the union and say without the union and without a strong union, that these programs and these things would not exist. So seeing that all of us are coming together, working collaboratively, will be able to have them feel secure in their job and secure with what they do on a daily basis. Because what we do, while it's great to support each other, our sole purpose is to make sure that kids are supported and that kids learn and kids grow.
Nancy Latham, the ISU researcher, says mentorship is handled unevenly across the state.
Some have huge, formal, substantive, deep induction and mentoring programs and support, and some are, oh, there's another kindergarten teacher, I'll just hook you up, and here's her cell phone number. You know what I mean? I mean, it's everything in between.
Attrition won't ever fall to zero. Some people just want to change careers. Here's Latham again.
When compared to other fields, education, if you look at the national employment data, there are fields bleeding more than we do. Retail bleeds, of course, a lot more than education. Nursing seems to be bleeding terribly.
Another troubling sign, says Ben Matthews from the IEA, is it's not just early career teachers who are leaving.
You know, we have folks who've been teaching for 20 or 25 years, and the job has changed completely from when they got into the work. There's less time to teach, less autonomy. There's a lot more top-down directives, very little time to really do the things that they are passionate about working with students, a lot more paperwork, a lot more hours, and there's folks who just are burned out and can't take that anymore.
You can see an interactive graphic show showing teacher retention rates from McLean County school districts at our website, WGLT.org. I'm Ryan Denham.
You're listening to 89.1 and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media, and the GLT News series Skipping School, about the challenges facing education today.
Support for GLT comes from the Central Illinois Regional Airport, encouraging travelers to support the local economy and enjoy a convenient airport experience, including free parking. CIRA says, don't travel before you travel. Fly local. Details and schedules at CIRA.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Nearly 8 in 10 public school administrators in Illinois said in a survey last year their school has a teacher shortage. A majority say they face a major shortage. In part two of the GLT education series Skipping School, Eric Stock examines how money plays a part in teacher decisions to stay in or leave the classroom and how it impacts administrator ability to give educators resources they need.
Brandon Oates is a 22-year-old from Poplar Grove near Rockford. Fresh after graduation from Illinois State University in the spring, he landed his first teaching gig at Kingsley Junior High in Normal, where he'll teach business and computer science. Oates taught grade school and high school students while he was a student teacher in Unit 5 schools last year at North Point Elementary in Normal Community, but he's never dealt with the unique challenge of instructing 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Yes, there is a lot of drama that starts in middle school. It's a very important time in the development of an adolescent, but it really is all about the trust and building rapport that's going to be key with the classroom management.
First-year teachers in Unit 5 who have a bachelor's degree start out at nearly $37,000 annually. It's one of the lowest starting salaries in McLean County, despite being the largest district in the county. District 87 in Bloomington offers the highest starting pay in the county at $38,000+. Oates says the pay had no bearing on his choice of school district or even his career choice.
Future educators who are looking to get into the field for a salary are probably not in the correct field. We don't go into this for the money, that's for sure. So that didn't really bother me at all.
Oates doesn't envision ever leaving teaching, but data suggests he's more likely to leave the profession before retiring than those who taught a generation ago. Unit 5 hired 200 new teachers and teacher's assistants for its 23 schools this summer. The district had to replace nearly 10% of its faculty. Some educators are retired, took other teaching jobs, or left the profession. The Illinois State Board of Education reports the state has turned over about 7% of its teaching positions each year for the past decade, so Unit 5 is above the norm. Superintendent Mark Daniels says that unprecedented turnover in his district is due in part to State Farm's recent job realignments, where many teacher families had to relocate. But he suggests there's also a larger cultural shift at play.
I think it's part of the millennial generation, millennial group. Historically, they don't stay in a position for their entire career. They tend to move and find different places and different locations and even change careers.
Daniel acknowledges teacher salaries and career earning potential can be a turnoff, specifically for teachers in Unit 5.
We knew that we were not competitive in regards to our salary schedule, so new contract, we had to revise that. We had to be somewhat competitive.
The district bumped its pay for first-year teachers 7% this year. Many educators believe pay has become a turnoff for prospective teachers. Ben Matthews, a field representative for the Illinois Education Association, recently attended a job fair at Illinois State.
It wasn't that long ago that the line at the Unit 5 table was out the door because people wanted to come work in this district. I was able to walk right up to the table this year and talk to the folks who were working there because there was no line at all. And it's because they would look at the starting pay and realize it was thousands of dollars less than what they could get elsewhere.
A survey by the Illinois Association of Regional Superintendents of Schools shows smaller, more rural school districts have an especially difficult time finding and keeping teachers. Gary Tipsword is superintendent of the public school system in Leroy, population 3,500.
If we open an elementary position 10 years ago, it was not uncommon to get 75 applicants for that job. We've had elementary positions open in the last couple of years where we were lucky to have 10.
Tip Sword is one of the architects of Illinois' new evidence-based school funding formula, which calculates school districts' funding needs based on nearly three dozen factors. Tip Sword says the intent of the new funding model is to give teachers the resources they need to give their students a better chance to succeed. That, he says, could keep more teachers in the profession.
When you feel successful, when you see positive things happening, you feel better about your job. It doesn't matter what your job is, right? So whether it's in journalism or whether it's in public education or whether it's in banking, when I see good numbers, I feel better.
Tip Sword says in researching the funding formula, he came upon something he has already put to use in his district. He says students who were struggling to meet certain academic benchmarks but wouldn't fit in a special education setting benefit from what's called an interventionist, a tutor who is also a liaison between the student, parents, and teachers to help the student meet their goals. He has hired one interventionist to help students in the elementary and junior high at Leroy. Tip Sword acknowledges teachers, especially entry level, should receive more pay, but he bristles at the $40,000 minimum salary bill lawmakers sent to Governor Bruce Rauner this spring.
They need to understand, and our public needs to understand, the implications to property taxes of a bill that was just passed in Springfield. And so some legislators in Springfield just told us in McLean County that you're potentially going to have to do something different with your property taxes. That seems like overreach.
Tip Sword says minimum salaries in Leroy are close enough to $40,000 that a tax increase wouldn't be necessary. But for some small school districts that have much lower starting pay, a tax hike might be unavoidable. He says for teachers who are well below the $40,000 minimum, the district would need to sharply increase annual pay, which could run afoul of another state law, which caps pay raises at 3% in the final years of a career to avoid pension spiking.
And so if I have people at the end of their careers, you just passed a piece of legislation that is going to force me to potentially take a penalty,
which the school district would have to pay. Plus, Tip Sword says the salary increases at the lower end of the pay scale would inevitably lead to more pressure to increase pay for the other faculty. According to the Illinois State Board of Education, 9 school districts last year paid entry-level teachers less than $30,000. The lowest was in Farington, a small town near the Indiana border, where teachers start at about $26,700. In McLean County, the lowest starting pay was Olympia at about $34,000. Next is Lexington at $35,000+. Then comes the largest school district in McLean County, Unit 5, which educates nearly half of the public school students in the county. Teachers there started last year at about $35,400. Unit 5's Mark Daniels says if the governor signs the bill mandating the $40,000 minimum, the district would likely need to raise property taxes.
I think Bloomington Normal understands the importance of educating their youth. So we will, but we'd have to go out for some type of revenue increase to cover that.
The governor hasn't taken action on the teacher salary bill. He has said teachers should be paid better. He also says the key to school districts' financial flexibility is reducing unfunded legislative mandates. While many teachers say they can live with a smaller paycheck than other professions, they are concerned about the uncertainty surrounding pensions, even after the minimum retirement age was recently raised to 67. Superintendent Tip Sword says that will be impractical, if not impossible, for some teachers to manage.
The idea of a kindergarten teacher getting up and down with kindergartners and matching the energy of a kindergartner at age 67, those are remarkable people who can do that, and they're rare.
While the majority of school districts in Illinois say they face a major teaching shortage, many more of them will tell you they face an even greater shortage of substitute teachers. Neil Stasinski retired from IBM 12 years ago and now serves as a substitute teacher at Normal Community, Normal West, and University High Schools. He says he tried subbing at the junior high level but found that wasn't for him.
You describe the girls as mean girls and the boys as stupid boys in junior high, and Mean girls are only mean to each other. They aren't mean to teachers, at least, but stupid boys are stupid to everyone. So that wasn't something that I enjoyed having in front of me.
At 6'6", at about 260 pounds, Stasinski has a little trouble commanding the classroom, but he says earning students' respect right away is essential. He takes classes at Heartland Community College, in part to stay sharp on any of the various subjects he might have to teach. He makes clear to his students it's not a free period when he's subbing.
When I come into a French or a Spanish or a German class and I speak to them in the language that they're learning, they realize it's not a day off, and it disappoints the students. But it also means that they don't try to get away with anything by talking in Spanish or French or whatever in front of me and thinking that I don't understand.
Stasinski says he finds substitute teaching intellectually challenging, but about 3 to 4 days a week is enough for him. He explains what frustrates him as a teacher.
The kids who have already given up on themselves or belong to gangs or into drugs or something, that can't always read the signs of when the kids are into drugs or when a kid responds to my classroom management as a challenge to his or her, primarily his masculinity.
Stasinski isn't teaching for the money. He makes between $80 and $105 a day, but he understands why that's a turnoff for some who might seek to sub as an entry-level point into a full-time teaching job.
As the pay goes up, the number of candidates will go up. And right now, the supply is low and the demand is high. But that comes and goes as the economy changes.
Unit 5 of District 87 offer the lowest substitute teacher pay in the county, $80 per day. U-High, Illinois State's Laboratory High School, pays the highest at $105 per day. The survey we alluded to earlier says a majority of school districts face a serious substitute teacher shortage, and most say the problem has become significantly worse in the last 5 years. It was about that time when the state increased the cost to become a substitute teacher and required them to pass a background check. Illinois Regional Offices of Education handles licensing for substitute teachers. The regional superintendent for McLean, DeWitt, Livingston, and Logan counties, Mark Jauntry, says he hopes the new evidence-based funding model will enable schools to not only pay substitutes better, but to better prepare them for the classroom.
Subs that go through some professional development that is provided either through our office or at the district level, to just kind of ensure that they're able to provide, you know, an adequate level of instruction and support in the classroom.
The state has also relaxed some guidelines for substitutes by reducing the cost of a license from $200 to $150, enabling candidates with 60 postgraduate credit hours as opposed to a 4-year degree to sub on a short-term basis, making it easier for out-of-state subs to transfer their license to Illinois and allowing retired teachers to sub longer without jeopardizing pensions. If pay is a worry for teachers in the public school system, it would seem to be an even greater issue in private schools, where teachers generally make less. Karen Hertzner taught math for 1 year at her alma mater, Normal West, before the district planned to eliminate the job and transfer her to Normal Community. Hertzner suggests that's when divine intervention took over.
I remember praying. I was like, Lord, I have no time to apply anywhere else. So if you want me to apply, I heard there was an opening at Central. You're going to make it happen. The next day, the electricity went out at Unit 5, and literally Unit 5 called it an act of God day. So I went and I applied at Central, and I got the job.
Hertzner is about to begin her 5th year teaching geometry and algebra at Central Catholic High School in Bloomington. She says looking back, she's glad her job at West got eliminated because she finds the private school system to be far more liberating. Not only can she be more open about her faith in school, she's been given more flexibility to teach the way she wants.
If my students aren't, you know, ready for a test day or whatever, I can take an extra day. I have a lot of freedom with how I plan and with the curriculum and how I teach it, and that's awesome.
Hertzner adds teacher evaluations and professional development, while they still exist in the private school system, are far less burdensome, while class sizes are generally much smaller, too. Typically 20 students max.
I can handle this amount of kids. I can give everybody a lot of good attention during the day, and you don't feel like you leave class, shoot, I didn't talk to this person. Everybody gets your attention. And so, that's really, really nice.
Hertzner is currently on maternity leave with her first child. Her husband is an account manager for a Bloomington insurance agent. She says while it's more of a strain making ends meet as a private school teacher, finding joy in her job is most important.
We make a little less, but we just live by our means. Honestly, as a single person, it was totally easy to live off of that as well. But yeah, you make a couple cuts and sacrifices, but it was just so worth it.
Unit 5's Mark Daniels says while most of his teaching positions have already been filled, there's always a need for teaching assistants, as some classes have more than 30 students. Starting pay is between $10 and $12 an hour. With all the challenges that educators face, no one is predicting the Illinois teacher shortage will end anytime soon. I'm Eric Stock.
That's part two of the GLT News series, Skipping School, on 89.1 and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Long summer days are upon us, and they seem primed for making memories. You can have a cookout, go to the pool, or get away to the beach. Wherever you go this summer, take NPR with you. Don't get burned by missing midterm election news. For context and analysis while you tan, listen to All Things Considered and hear the bigger picture every afternoon.
And there's Central Illinois News. I'm All Things Considered host Mike McCurdy. Join me from 3 to 6 p.m. for All Things Considered on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from the Community Cancer Center, dedicated to providing comprehensive, community-based cancer care in Bloomington Normal. The center gives patients hope through state-of-the-art technology and caring support services. Details at cancercenter.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Bloomington Normal's only locally owned and operated broadcast media outlet, 89.1 and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Teachers in the 21st century have to balance business model standards with teaching, nursing, and sometimes parenting students. In this third installment of GLT's education series, Skipping School, Mary Cullen talks with teachers about how the role has changed and what that means for the field of education.
New teaching models seem to come out every few years, and teachers everywhere scramble to adapt. Claire Rabarchek is going into her sixth year teaching special education at Normal Community High School. Rabarchek says she thinks the constant change overwhelms many educators.
I think that is one thing that is consistent in our job, is that it's always changing because we're trying new things to see what is successful.
She says the administration often emphasizes one thing and staff another, so teachers push back.
We have to focus on the student. We have to meet their needs first, and we have to, address the whole student.
One of those recent models is standards-based teaching, which expects all students in the same grade to get to the same level of mastery. Nancy Latham, a professor at Illinois State University's College of Education, says the most drastic changes to teaching models began 15 years ago.
We kind of wanted a move to take a business model and lay it over the top of teaching and say, well, in the business model, if you're not making this many widgets per hour and you're not selling this many at this profit, then you're not considered successful, so we're going to close this store.
A problem, Latham says, is that the standards-based model does not take into account that not all children have the same background.
That's what teachers are dealing with, but the measuring stick only says if she can't read her vowels by October of, then you teacher are a failure, her school is a failure.
Latham says putting the equivalent of standards-based teaching in any other profession is ludicrous. She compares standards-based teaching to dentistry, saying a dentist only keeps his job depending on the number of cavities his patients come in with. Julie Riley is beginning her 26th year of teaching. Riley handles 7th grade at Bloomington Junior High.
I think the counterpart to that, the standards approach,
is expecting a standardized outcome, and we're not building widgets, we're working with humans.
Riley says administrators sometimes think the way to align a curriculum is to make sure everyone is doing the same thing, though students have vastly different backgrounds.
That does kind of tie educators' hands, where they might not be able to make as many decisions for themselves as they would like, because they do have to give this certain test or have that certain project or this amount of growth per kid.
Yet, teachers have a job to do. Special ed teacher Claire Rabarchek says educators cope with changing methods through partnerships with other teachers and by trial and error.
Not everything's going to work right the first time, and if someone has some more experience in it, taking that knowledge and being vulnerable with one another and saying, like, yes, I use this, it was successful. No, don't try that, that was a mess. And then saying, okay, I'm willing to try these new initiatives, but I'm still going to have to take time, and it might not be on the same timeline that worked for someone else or in a different classroom.
Help can come from outside of the school as well. ISU's Nancy Latham says teaching universities can partner with local schools and teachers.
We need to realize that the day they graduate, that relationship doesn't end. That we've got to be there with them at the 5-year and the 10-year and whatever mark, and we've got to be with these buildings.
When she was teaching at the early childhood level, Latham says she remembers having much more flexibility in her classroom.
I was much more, in my opinion, able to see a child, identify their individual needs, and meet them where they were and take them to the next place, you know, with whatever learning we were talking about. I was able to kind of design that learning and do things in open-ended ways, and I was able to assess that way too.
Now, Latham says teaching models are designed like a funnel.
I can teach them if I want to in all these different ways, but there's only one way that I'm allowed to say I know they know. Or assess them. And so I think that is very, very limiting.
And when a student falls behind, 7th grade teacher Julie Riley says all eyes fall on the teacher and the institution. Riley says it feels like public school teachers have been beaten up for a long time.
It often feels like every societal ill is laid at the feet of schools and teachers. So anything that goes wrong with a kid certainly is the school's fault. At the same time, we're just expected to do a lot more.
Often, that a lot more means a lot more hats. Julie Hagler teaches at Normal Community and serves as the vice president for Unit 5's Education Association. She says the role of a teacher has changed in some ways, but mostly it's how much time is devoted to non-traditional work.
What I've seen over the last 20 years is that it has shifted and that I'm spending less time as an educator and more time as a parent, filling in that role for students who don't have the supports at home, who need those kinds of social-emotional supports at school.
Hagler says it's not easy to find the balance.
It is a struggle to hit those curricular goals, but the reality is if students don't feel safe, if they don't feel like their basic needs are being met, they can't learn. So those have to come first, and then the curriculum has to follow.
But providing that support to students makes the role of a teacher even more tasking. Again, Claire Rabarchek.
And I think you're going to see that across the board, but specifically with my students who are in that at-risk population and maybe struggling to communicate or just having some more traumatic experiences in their life. That social-emotional piece of instruction is so important.
Rabarchek says the role of a teacher is everything.
You are a friend, a mother, a counselor, a nurse. You know, you have to play all those roles because we have students coming from all walks of life. And you just have to do what you need to get through the day.
She explains that for some students, that's providing them with food or a care that can't be met at home. That has always been part of what teachers do, Rabarchek says, but lately it's happening more. Normal Community's Julie Hagler agrees.
The students are coming to us with so many more individualized needs and from so many different backgrounds that it is pulling us in lots of different directions. And we have so many more students in each classroom that just adds another layer to the demands on the teacher in the classroom.
But with all these needs, teachers must remain steady in their pursuit of standards-based teaching because, well, that's how teachers themselves are graded. Latham says she believes evaluating teachers is important, but rating teacher effectiveness solely by student test scores misses a lot.
I'm not just concerned about teachers that we do need to probably remove. I'm really concerned about the wonderful teachers, the excellent teachers, the good teachers, the new but good teachers. Everybody needs to constantly be looking at how do they take it to the next level.
Latham says the current evaluation model does not provide teachers with the security to take risks and explore, and the profession suffers as a result. Some teachers burn out from constant change, some become crabbed and rigid in the attempt to follow the rules and meet the goals, and some, like 26-year junior high veteran Julie Riley, roll with the punches.
The job is different. The job is heavy, but I'm going back for year 26. I still like kids. I still like words. This is what I'm meant to do.
Riley is among many teaching pros who say despite the changes, they're still pretty happy campers. I'm Mary Cullen.
This is GLT News and Ideas. We've announced the guest for GLT's next Radio Faces event, and you can learn more at WGLT.org. NPR correspondent Allison Aubrey focuses on food, nutrition, and health. Discover more about her background and check out ticket levels and meal options. Get the details for GLT's Radio Faces November 9th at WGLT.org. You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Out of the many variables that are affecting the teacher shortage in Illinois and across the nation, perhaps the largest one is children themselves. Are they different than they were a generation ago in important and fundamental ways that make teaching tougher or not? In this final part of the GLT News series, Skipping School, we tackle the question whether and how kids have changed.
We're very squishy, so... I think a lot of times, parents and educators want concrete answers about how we learn and develop. But yeah, there's a lot of squishiness.
Braswell says studies are showing that kids hit the same developmental milestones at the same age as they did in previous generations. Rough times for reading, gaining ability to concentrate, emotional development milestones, all about the same. Ages of stages of brain development haven't changed in the aggregate for most children, though there are outliers. Karen Stevens agrees. She spent more than four decades in early childhood education, including as longtime head of the Illinois State University Child Care Center.
I absolutely do not think children have changed one iota. Their developmental needs for attachment, bonding, security, nourishment, nurturing has not changed for eons.
Other than biology-driven factors for children, though, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, students have changed.
Carl Gakey is a 16-year veteran Unit 5 teacher now at Normal Community West High School.
They've grown because our society has grown and changed, right?
Culturally, there are numerous themes and variables. Poverty, technology, family dynamics, and on and on and on. If you're looking for a handy metaphor to picture how much of a societal barometer children are, Gakey says, try this one.
It's like amphibians, right?
He says amphibians feel the effects of climate change long before other animals.
Because their skin is porous and they absorb water inside of them, and they are affected in a way different than other animals. And children are kind of like that.
Gakey says even the brains of children respond to stimuli as they develop in a stronger way than adults. Karen Stevens says the environment has changed our children.
And I think that has been the key factor.
Stevens says children now spend about 7 hours of screen time a day, even preschoolers. For the first time, we're raising a generation that will have a shorter lifespan than current adults because of obesity, a rise in diabetes. Another big change is a lack of kids having contact with any real green nature. Stevens says kids are loved but not trusted, perhaps protected too much.
I think that we've got some kids who aren't as confident. They question themselves more, meaning I can't do it, or maybe I can't do it. Taken a bit of their courage away.
Kids, she says, live in a hostile environment in a very grassroots way.
I mean, let's face it, school starts up, and I've literally heard people saying, well, let's make bets on when this first school shooting's going to happen. Now, if that's become normal, if that's become something that we can joke about, that worries me.
Stevens also says children today are more indignant than they were a generation ago. She says they pay more attention to the adult world than the adults sometimes think, and they're capable of seeing the irony of going to a school with stickers on the door saying no guns allowed. Kids also pay attention to the lack of politeness or civility in public discourse in spite of the classroom messages they get. To the contrary, Unit 5 Spanish teacher Carl Gakey says he never thought society would regress to people marching in the streets with tiki torches shouting racial slurs.
They notice this. These are the role models. When we've got the President of the United States tweeting out horrible things about people, I mean, it's so hard to hear the First Lady talk about wanting to address bullying and then to see that that is cyberbullying. What we see coming out of the President of the United States. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Other elements might matter more to how children perform and the pressures teachers face in the classroom. Jeff Hill is the superintendent of the Peoria Suburban Morton District. He has headed the largely urban and low-poverty Illinois State University lab schools, and years ago he was a principal in the rural Olympia District.
We know poverty is really the number one indicator for low-achieving students. And that simply goes to the background, the life experiences that can be provided a student before they come to school.
That's not to say poverty is destiny in producing messed up kids, but psychology professor Greg Braswell says it is a factor.
You know, we go through cycles of poverty levels increasing and decreasing, and you know, some of the potential problems tied to that. There are a lot of traumas and difficulties that can be associated with poverty.
Poverty rates in central Illinois spiked upwards a few percent during and following the Great Recession, though in most areas those rates have subsided in recent years. Longer-term trends, though, show flat to falling per capita income in Illinois and many parts of the country. The amount of resources devoted to addressing the challenges of poverty also matter, and that's something lacking in Illinois in recent years because of the state budget crisis and political deadlock. Braswell says economic security matters not only in intellectual development and enrichment activities wealthier kids have access to, but in the emotional makeup of kids. There is a poverty penalty, and not just in the U.S. He says it's similar in many countries.
There have been studies suggesting that a lot of parents that are wealthier, some cases might be a little bit more permissive or want their children to be a little bit more creative and autonomous and be children that will, you know, eventually, you know, maybe want careers or be prepared for careers that involve some autonomy. Whereas parents that are more working class tend to maybe foster a little less of that.
Some educators believe society has also lost ways to create structure and self-discipline in the lives of students. Jeff Hill of the Morton District says the development of a norm of two-parent working families is one such element because there's less time for a parent to provide structure at home.
So when those habits are instilled and kids see that they work and that they bring a certain amount of success, then they're more likely to implement those habits when there's not structure around to help them implement it.
I don't buy it that there's less parenting time.
Karen Stevens says even in the era when more families had one parent in the home, not all that time was spent parenting. A big chunk of it was doing household management. That is more often automated now. For Stevens, a more important generational variable is that kids today have far less unstructured free play time and more scheduled activities. She agrees with Jeff Hill, though, that time is important for parents to give to children, and says she sees a positive there.
One of the biggest changes I saw in my career was the amount of involvement in true parenting of children. Dads are much more engaged, and that's only good news for our children, male or female.
Stephen says she has seen a change in divorce, too. The divorce rate has leveled off since the 1970s. More importantly, on the whole, Stephen says parents are doing better at managing their ex-relationships.
I've seen an awful lot of good co-parents who weren't good as marriage partners. But when they've separated or divorced, at least they're not just telling children, it's not your fault. They're showing children by not fighting continually, by sharing some responsibilities.
That's important because most experts say divorce can be what's called an adverse childhood experience, an ACE, or a trauma.
Unit 5 teacher Carl Gakey says the Illinois Education Association is doing research with hospitals in the Chicago area and starting to recognize trauma in a different way.
Children that have a high number of these ACEs, their brains develop in a more flight or fight mode. The hormones and the chemicals in the brain, they're flooded with them constantly. And so when the children come to us that have high number of ACEs, what we notice is that they're a little more reactionary. And they tend to act a little bit differently.
For instance, if a child has a parent with addiction, domestic violence, or mental illness at home, school might well be their safe place. And if they get in a fight at school, Gakey says the old crime and punishment by suspension response is not the best way to handle it because it exposes the child to more trauma. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel says he believes the number of kids with multiple traumas is increasing and presenting challenges to classroom teachers. It's not yet clear whether there are more of these wounded kids or schools are doing better at recognizing them. What is certain, Morton Superintendent Jeff Hill says, is that it's affecting the way teachers have to handle kids and making educator lives less certain.
We're now having to pay way more attention to the why underneath the behavior as opposed to the actual behavior itself in a way of helping manage the class.
Hill says teachers used to deal with the conduct alone and expect that would fix the problem. That's no longer true. Now, it's not quite fair to say this is a new method for teachers.
Good ones always have. I mean, great ones always have. But I also think that there was this other level of you could manage your class through just dealing with conduct. You could be fairly successful doing that as a teacher and not get to the why all the time. There's more students now who need a more in-depth approach.
Getting to the why is part of the social and emotional learning educators must monitor, as well as reading, writing, and arithmetic. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel says teachers have to create a community within the classroom. He says it used to be there was no need for communities because you were there to learn, and if you didn't learn, that was your problem. Now, Daniel says, society can no longer afford dropouts because their chance of making a meaningful living is scant.
It is about ensuring that we're connecting with our students and forming relationships and working with those students who are isolated, who are feeling as if, what do I have to lose? Or are so angry that they're going to cause mass harm.
Daniel says research on student belonging shows the key factor is activities, not just sports, but clubs. He says there's a major return from 2 to 3 co-curricular activities, but diminishing returns on building relationships after 7+.
I don't care where the student lives, whether it be an inner city school, a suburban school district, or a rural school district, students are students. And they need to feel part of the school.
Most teachers and education theorists are also still grappling with how technology is changing students. And there's a lot of ambivalence. Unit 5's Carl Gakey says those teaching now are not digital natives like their students.
When I was first beginning to teach, we hadn't invented cell phones. We hadn't invented the internet, really. All those things are new to us.
And in spite of efforts to adapt, embrace, and use, Gakey says, adults look at tech differently than children do.
It used to be that you would look at a child's paper planner. That doesn't exist anymore, right? Not many people carry around paper planners. I do, and my colleagues make fun of me mercilessly. But I had students that would snap a picture of the assignment before they walked out the door. They're not writing it down. And so it was like a shift for me.
There's debate whether a lot of screen time delays development of social skills in children. A lot of teachers and childhood experts say they do see differences. But again, it's squishy. Early childhood expert Karen Stevens says technology can also enhance development of social skills by encouraging cooperation, sharing, and teamwork.
We haven't finessed technology yet. It still is in, I believe, in use with children in the guinea pig stage. And I'm hoping in 50 years that it will look much different than it looks now.
Another way teachers grope toward helping students use technology is that it allows more flexible use of time in ways that weren't possible before. Morton Superintendent Jeff Hill says it's easier to get a hold of classmates for team projects, easier to find information efficiently, but, Hill says, it's easier to be inefficient as well.
Just saw a study the other day about how iPads can be a distraction in the classroom unless there's a real concerted effort to teach students how to not be distracted by their device. We're not always thinking about the self-management that goes along with having a device.
Yes, children today are different in many ways than previous generations. And those differences are challenging for teachers who come from very different backgrounds than their charges do. This may also press some teachers to get out of the field. Unit 5's Mark Daniel finds a small silver lining, though. He says the Darwinian conditions that lead to teacher attrition and the teacher shortage may also have raised the level of the profession compared to years ago.
Yes, you had occasionally teachers that were what I would say outliers, unbelievable instructors, but that wasn't the norm. Today, I would say we have more excellent instructors, excellent teachers than we've ever had before.
The challenge remains for school districts to find enough of those teachers. You can hear the stories in the GLT series on the teacher shortage at our website, wglt.org/skippingschool. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Eric Stock, Ryan Denham, and Mary Cohen. I'm Charlie Schlenker. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. Also look at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet your comments. Use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.